It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 351, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Women's volleyball took out two good teams this week to advance to the Final Four. We discuss their chances in the rematch with Stanford. Men's basketball bounced back with two wins against rivals. We debate if this is a turnaround story and what Nick Emery's impact will end up being on this year's team. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout, and you can listen to Matt and I right now. So, Matt, I am about halfway into season two of Stranger Things, and once again, why didn't you tell me how good this show was?
Pretty sure I did.
Maybe not multiple strong
times.
Enough.
Probably multiple times, but that's cool.
So by the next time we record, I'll be done. Because I've got a trip coming up here, and I'll finish it up on this trip. I did watch the first episode. All the episodes I've watched so far have been on my phone while I'm flying on a plane.
And, oh, that's tough.
And it's still super good and super creepy. I watched one last night in the house. More creepy on a big TV.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. That, most definitely.
With all the lights out. All right, Matt. Well, let's just jump right into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, women's volleyball. They're pretty good at volleyball.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say above average.
Above average. A tight four-set match against Florida on Friday night, and then Saturday night they swept Texas, the University of Texas. And funny enough, though, it was an incredibly close match despite the sweep.
Yeah, it was a lot closer than the sweep will make it look like, right?
Yeah, I think they were tied at either 19 or 20. In each set, in each of those three sets. In the last set, they were tied at, they were down 20 to 19, right? So I got to go back to the box score, but, and they just basically dominated the rest of the match.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, it felt like they all were pretty tight right up till the end, like the last few points.
It's like, but they were just waiting.
Yeah, it's kind of like they were just, you know, it was just wait for the crunch time and then we'll put this thing away. You know, one of the things that struck me as I watched it the other night was that we had this conversation about, you know, teams losing games late in an undefeated season and the advantage of having to deal with some of that adversity. But I think if you go back and just use this past weekend as a kind of a barometer for where this team is at on that scale, like you don't need to lose sets, you don't need to lose matches in order to be able to bounce back from adversity, especially look at the first set in the Texas match. You know, they got down a little bit and had to dig themselves out of a hole. And so I think this is a team that's got that quality, which is something you have to have, right? If you get this deep into a tournament like this,
yeah,
you have
sure.
to be able to do that. You have to be able to recover from these things.
Now,
you know,
now.
You got one where, you know, somebody misses on a hit, it just whiffs at the ball, right? And the team's able to just kind of shrug it off, laugh it off, really, and move on. I mean, it's pretty remarkable.
So senior Ronnie Jones Perry, 25 kills, hit at a 367 number there, and had 11 kills in that second set, which ended up being, that's the one where, quite frankly, I thought they were going to lose that set.
Yep.
And in the third set, I kind of felt like, I don't know, maybe it's because of the first two sets, I'm like, they're going to come back and do this. And then Mary Lake had a couple of amazing digs, one in the third set that's just like blew my mind because I thought it hit the ground. They kept playing. I'm like, and then when they showed the replay, she just barely got her hand underneath it. And then Lindy Haddock-Epic, 43 assists and four digs. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing performance all the way around.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So, our first Tweetbag question.
Tweetbag.
Comes from Robbie King. That's at RBKing303 on Twitter. And if you'd like to tweet at us, you can do that at BYU_RiseShout. Robbie says, women's volleyball looked amazing this weekend. We concur. Some of that success was aided by playing in the Smith Fieldhouse. I don't think we can debate that. Right, Matt?
It definitely helps.
The ESPN announcers were in love with the crowd at the Smith Fieldhouse.
They were enamored.
They were enamored. So Robbie goes on to say, do they have what it takes to beat Final Four quality teams without the home court advantage? Well, then the Sweet 16, by the way, is here in Minneapolis starting on Thursday. And then the national championship game will be Saturday. Matt, they beat Stanford, their opponent, in this semifinal matchup earlier in the season, but in Provo. So do they have what it takes to beat a very, very good Stanford team in the Final Four?
Well, I've got a couple things I will hit on in response to this question. The first one is, you know, we talked about how good was the conference really. They put a couple teams into the tournament. And, you know, so did we really have a good idea of how good this team was going into the tournament? And after looking at their performance in the tournament thus far, I think one of the things that I don't think Robbie King would disagree with what I'm about to say, but this is clearly a Final Four quality team. This is arguably the best women's volleyball team in the country. And so, and the second point is that if this were on the road, if you were going to California to play Stanford, I would feel differently about it. But I mean, this is a very much a neutral site type of a situation, and they may really be, you know, in or out of the Smith Fieldhouse, the best team in the country. So I'm going to go ahead and say I absolutely believe that this team has what it takes to beat Final Four quality teams without the home court advantage of the Smith Fieldhouse. Now, do I expect sweeps? Do I expect big wins in individual sets? I don't know. But do they have what it takes to win those matches? Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they can beat Stanford on a neutral court. I they're not going to be favored in that match, right? It'll be an upset if they win, only because Stanford is that good and BYU beat them earlier in the season, but again, at home. And Stanford has been playing some amazing volleyball themselves. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And you know, regardless of the result on Thursday night, this has been an amazing run. And one of the best, you know, one of the best team runs in recent BYU sports history.
Yeah, it's an amazing run.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, they were ranked number one most of the season, or at least, yeah, I think most of the season.
Most of the season.
And without that LMU loss, they would have had an undefeated regular season and been probably the number one seed in the tournament. I would have assumed that was kind of what everyone was assuming anyway. But regardless, they get a chance to prove it away from the Smith Fieldhouse, but they earn the chance to play in the Smith Fieldhouse, right? That's how the tournament works, which reminds me, this is exactly how I think you would do a 16-team college football playoff. First two rounds, they host.
Do it at home.
Yeah, they host it. So this weekend, Matt, you'd have... Okay, I'll get to this later. But it's really cool that you earn that, if you're going to have a bigger playoff, that you earn the opportunity to have a big advantage. And of course, I mean, that Smith Fieldhouse crowd is amazing. Before we get on to the rest of the podcast, Matt, the first novel in both of my series, the Empire of the Peak series and the Sycorax series, are both on sale for 99 cents at your favorite ebook retailer.
Is like a Christmas deal?
It's like a Christmas deal until the week of Christmas. You can get them. The first one is called Peak Crosser, and the other one is called Caliban's World. And you can get either of those at any of the major ebook retailers for 99 cents now through Christmas. So go ahead and check those out. Peak Crosser's Epic Fantasy. Caliban's World is more of kind of a space opera, science fiction kind of thing. So, all right, Matt, let's talk about basketball. Last week I was a little despondent, right?
You were a little bit of a Debbie Downer last week.
I was after the two losses to Utah State and Weber State. This week, Elite Eight, here we come.
Wow, with this, I feel like we're on a roller coaster here. This is probably not sustainable.
Okay, I'm being overly sarcastic, but Matt, it does feel good to beat Utah.
It doesn't. It sure doesn't feel bad.
And you've seen that picture of Yoli Childs posterizing that guy from Utah.
Fantastic. Number 13. A great shot.
I mean, he's just absolutely hammering the guy. And we'll get to Yoli Childs here in a minute, but it does feel good. You know, in the last couple of weeks, we had the women's volleyball team eliminate the University of Utah from the volleyball tournament. And then, of course, this past weekend, we had the Cougars kind of humiliate the University of Utah, I would say, not just in posterization form. So Matt, did you – okay, we'll answer this. We'll get to this through TweetBag questions. Robbie King climbs in the TweetBag again. He says –
Climb on in, Robbie.
That's right. Men's basketball with two enjoyable wins this week. Have they turned a corner? How much did the return of Nick Emery affect that? And so Matt, have they turned a corner? Does this make you feel differently than you felt when we last recorded 5 days ago?
Maybe slightly more optimistic, because I think I let you kind of drag me down when we were recording last week. So maybe I feel a little bit more optimistic after watching them. But it always feels good to beat Utah. And
Utah State. Earlier I said losses to Weber State and Utah State. I meant Illinois State and Weber State. Too many states that aren't actually states. I've never been to the state of Weber.
I don't think the state of Weber has a star on the flag, but
I don't believe so.
Yeah, that may not. They may not. And for whatever reason, like the Utah State game felt closer to me than the Utah game, but I mean, numbers wise, maybe it wasn't. But I mean, obviously, it feels good. Beating both of these teams feels good, given where we were a week ago and how we were feeling about this team. Does it make me feel a lot more optimistic? Well, you know, no. I mean, because when we talked about the schedule and what we felt like was going to happen going forward and what the team was going to need to do, you know, these were wins that you needed.
Yes,
you needed to win these games. If you're trying to keep your hopes alive for the tournament, you had to win these games.
Yeah, and they did so, to your point. I mean, the Utah State game, they dominated the first half and kind of coasted in the second half. And in the Utah game, it was close in the first half, and then they kind of dominated the second half. I don't know if they've turned a corner, but the Nick Emery question is interesting. Yeah. Because in the Utah State game, he was a big part of that win. Had a nice return game against Utah State. But then in Utah, against Utah, he was kind of a non-factor. I mean, statistically speaking, did play some meaningful minutes and give some defense and such. But I mean, how do you assess, and it's a very small sample size, but Nick Emery's first two games back in uniform?
Well, you know, if I think about it, the way that it was asked a question, the return of Nick Emery, have they turned a corner? Maybe they've turned a little bit of a corner here. Did the return of Nick Emery have a real impact? Not in any visible way.
I thought against Utah State it did.
Maybe.
I 3 of 4 shooting from three-point land. I mean, we haven't been a great three-point shooting team so far this season. So a game like that was I thought that was a positive sign. Now he kind of disappeared against Utah. And
he was invisible.
You know, he didn't like punch anybody or anything, so that's positive.
Yikes!
You know, that's a positive against that team. But I felt unsafe watching that on television.
I was wearing all sorts of protective gear.
Yeah, I mean, I felt unsafe. I mean, it felt like at any moment something truly terrible was going to happen, like another loss to Utah. So anyway. Wade Hillam on Facebook asked this. If nothing else, he says, I think that Emery adds energy to this team. He's aggressive, and I think he will play with a chip on his shoulder. I would, too, if the NCAA did to me what they did to him. Do you think that his talent and experience is just what this team needs to make it back to the tournament? Wade got to us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Matt, Is he the difference maker between making the NCAA tournament and not making the NCAA tournament?
Right now, I don't think that he is. Especially, and this is going to, you know, maybe I feel like I'm being a little bit of a downer.
Yeah, what is wrong with you? He is the difference maker, man.
Listen. I'm just worried. My concern is that it's not going to matter. My concern is that the resume at this point, it is what it is. And you have a couple of losses in here going into what's going to be a tough conference schedule that you're playing from deep in a hole already.
No.
And do I think that Nick Emery is going to be the difference maker that digs you out of that hole? You know, when you're the maybe the third or fourth best team in the conference in a conference that's going to send one or this year I bet you they send two teams to the tournament.
Oh, there'll be two teams to go to the tournament probably, but if they could beat Mississippi State here in a couple weeks. You have a game, a non-conference game on your schedule, a road game against a top 25 team that totally reverses everything you just said. And not that I'm predicting they will do that, but I'm just saying, like, they're not dead. And they've got, you know, four games against St. Mary's and Gonzaga, and potentially maybe call it six games because of how well San Francisco's playing, where they could get some quality wins. Now, that being said, it's still an uphill battle at this point. But, yes, if they end up making the tournament, I think I can confidently say that they probably don't without Nick Emery. How's that?
Okay. If you put it that way, I think I can agree to that.
Okay. And then Chris Gregory also says on Facebook, two quality in-state rivalry wins. Hopefully it will carry some momentum forward. I think it will. Now, that being said, the next few games here on the schedule, we've got coming up this week, Portland State and UNLV. And then the following week, of course, is San Diego State. And then a week later, right before New Year's, is that big matchup against Mississippi State in Starkville. Zach Thornton at Coronado Zach on Twitter says, what exactly did Emery do to the NCAA to base the forfeiture of all the games Emery played in? I thought since we self-disciplined, the penalty would be lighter. And it's not all the games he played in, right? It's only games that happened after some of these violations, if I'm remembering correctly. We went over this before. You and I think it's stupid. Him getting suspended and there being the vacated and the wins we talked about is kind of unprecedented and weird, but the other penalties are pretty normal. The suspension, even the loss of a scholarship, those things are fairly typical in cases like this.
Yeah, they're dumb, but there's not a good answer for Zach's question because there's no good precedent to compare this to. Just because most of the precedent that you would compare this to didn't garner the same type of punishment.
Correct. Yes. Interesting. But Matt, let's talk about Yoli Childs for a second. Okay.
Yoli Childs.
Let's go back to his last four games. Okay. In the loss, overtime loss to Illinois State, he does 27-16-6. Okay. In the loss to Weber, he was not the problem. He had 31-7-3. You're going to get used to that 31 number. In the win against Utah State, 31-7 and a block. And then in the win against Utah, 31-11, couple of assists. And by the way, only foul trouble against Weber State. He's been fairly foul trouble free in this last four or five games. How good is Yoli Childs becoming? I mean, because he's having an amazing run here early in the season.
I think this guy is the difference maker, right? So if we go back and talk about, you know, what we think is going to make the difference over time, I think that the evolution of Yoli Childs in this season is the story. And, you know, you look at the kind of some of the games that you were talking about that are coming up on the schedule, Mississippi State on the road. And then we get into the conference schedule, and you got four or five, six of these games that give you an opportunity at quality wins for your tournament resume. For those things to go our way, I believe that the story is going to be Yoli Childs and the way that he plays for the stretch, down the stretch of the remainder of this season. it is on his shoulders the way the rest of this season goes.
So he's averaging 6 more points a game than he did last year, 3 more rebounds, almost 3 more rebounds, and an assist more. And he's looking good passing the ball, looking good offensively, and at least the defensive advanced metrics on sportsreference.com list him as our best defensive player. So looking at that, Matt, he has improved a ton over last year. Based on him dipping his toe in the draft waters, I think this is likely his last season, and he goes the way of Eric Mika at the end of the year. I don't think he gets drafted into the NBA, by the way, even with the stats that he's putting up. But Matt, you look at his stats, and I wanted to do a little comparison here with Eric Mika, because, you know, we talked about when Mika was here how good of a guy he was that last season he was here. And if you look at the averages, it's still Mika's better, like both advanced stats and traditional stats. But man, if you had told me that Yoeli Childs would at least make me ponder whether he was as good as his sophomore year, his junior year is as good as Mika's sophomore year, I would have said that's nuts.
Yeah, that would have sounded crazy.
Sounded crazy, but he is—he's putting it together in a pretty amazing way, and he's putting up those numbers where the rest of the offense has struggled a little bit in a couple of the games where he's put up big numbers, and yet he's still been fairly dominant.
Well, and I think that the team can survive with Yoeli Childs being the dominant performer. As long as you've got a couple pieces around him that can pick up the slack when another team figures something out to slow him down, right? So if, you know, as a team figures something out to slow him down, Haws, Celius, and now Emery, that's where their roles, I think, become a lot more important, is they've got to be good enough that teams can't just focus on putting the clamps on Yoeli and slowing down the team's offense. And that I believe, is going to be the key. But it's going to be the way they're able to do that offensively and contribution on defensive rebounds. I think defensive rebounds is going to be a big story in some of these close games against these good teams.
All right. That I think, is absolutely fair, Matt. And I think you're right. And I think, you know, we'll find out a lot in the next couple of weeks if this has been if they have turned a corner, or if this is just a good week and we're going to see a lot of inconsistent, mediocre weeks as well mixed in there. So let's talk about football. We're going to preview the bowl game next week, but we did have a question that was a follow-up on, let me see, who has the original question? The original question came from Alex Cook last week in the tweet bag, but Spencer Thurman on Facebook has this. He says, I'm confused because last week Alex asked us what past BYU football player from recent history would we want on next year's team. And Spencer was confused by our answer. He says, last show there's a question about choosing any player for the current football team, and you both discussed Harvey Unga as the running back. I loved Unga, but wasn't Jamal better in almost every way? Am I experiencing recency bias, or am I right? Hashtag facebag. Matt, you and I started talking about Unga because that was in Alex's question. Let me rephrase it to you again. If you had to choose either of those two backs to put them on next year's team, who would you select?
See, that's tough, right? There's a part of me that wants to just stick to my guns for the sake of sticking to my guns here.
Stick to your guns. Be stubborn.
I absolutely understand what Spencer is saying, right, about Jamal being better. But when I think about the offense that I believe Grimes wants to run, Unga's the running back I take.
See, I don't care about offenses that Jamal Williams was the better running back. So you got to take him.
But that all being said, I still take Kyle Van Noy is still the guy I take. I take Kyle Van Noy. If I only can take one player, I take Van Noy over either of them.
So think about this for a second. Jamal Williams never played on a great offense. Harvey Unga played on offenses that were stacked. Quarterback.
Surrounded by by future NFL players.
Yeah, on the offensive side.
Right.
Now, either of them, I'll tell you right now, either Grimes and company would happily welcome back either of them. And I don't think the gap between them is particularly large. They're obviously their style is different, so comparing is a little difficult. But if you look at the raw stats, Williams was better. And I think if you dig a little deeper, you'll find that Williams was probably a little better. I think we ended up getting on Unga because that's who Alex mentioned in his question. Both of us decided, if I remember right, that we'd want Kyle Van Noy on the defense, right? Like the gap between Van Noy and any other linebacker we're going to have on the roster next year and the gap between one of these great running backs and whoever's going to carry the ball the most next year, I think the gap is bigger between Van Noy and that linebacker group. Nothing against those guys. I'm just saying, like, that's how good Van Noy was. He was a transcendent player. And
I will say, I'm sorry, go ahead and let you finish.
Oh, and I'm just saying, like, Williams and Unga, like, they were amazing BYU running backs and would have started in most college programs. I don't think they had the equivalent college career to Kyle Van Noy.
So for me, when I think about what you just said, the gap between the current running back group and somebody like a Harvey Unger and a Jamal, and then if I look at the gap between today's linebackers versus Kyle Van Noy, I agree with you that the linebacker gap is probably larger, but I don't know how much larger it really is. I mean, Harvey Unger and Jamal Williams compared to any running back we have on the roster right now, I mean, just head and shoulders way above, right? But when in the totality of the offense or totality of the defense, I think that's where I see a much larger gap, right? If I look at the offenses that either of those guys played with and the defensive performance that this defense could maybe that's the wrong way to say it, but when I look at the way Kyle Van Noy would change this defense and the impact he would have versus the impact a Harvey Unger or Jamal Williams would have on this offense, the impact that Kyle Van Noy would have is so much greater, which is why I have to choose him.
Isn't that what I just said? Rearrange the words?
I kind of did, but you were talking about the gaps in the position groups, and I feel like the gaps in the position groups are probably just as wide. There is no running back on that roster who's even close to a Harvey Unger or Jamal Williams, but there's other pieces of the offense that make up for that. There's no linebacker on the defense that's even close to Kyle Van Noy, and then there's nothing else on defense that gets you close.
Okay, wait. Look, I got to get you back in. We were barely a top 100 offense this last year, and we were a top 40 defense. I can't buy your reasoning. Like, I mean, there is nothing on this offense besides Zach Wilson and maybe Bushman that I think is anywhere close to a really good offense. And on this defense, I actually think they were pretty darn good and will still, they're going to go backwards, I think, because I don't think they have anybody as good as Taki and Corbin Kaufusi, though maybe on the defensive line, little Kaufusi and some others will do just fine next year. The defense will be fine next year. Tuiaki's defenses, I know you dislike them, but they have not been the issue. I mean, if you could plug an Unga or a Williams onto this offense, I'm just not buying your reasoning. I guess we are not saying the same things. And I think Katoa someday is going to be one of the best 10 running backs we've had. So I guess we maybe disagree on the gaps here as well.
Yeah, but I think if I think about Katoa may be one of the best running backs we've ever had, which I think talks to my point a little bit. But defensively, Kyle Van Noy is a kind of a defensive player, the likes of which you never see. I mean, nobody can take over a game on defense. We don't have anybody on this defense that can do that because you hardly see it. It's a generational type of a phenomenon. Whereas offensively, you know, we've got a guy like a Katoa. We've got a quarterback that is showing some real promise. And I'm not saying – and I'm not getting on the defense. There are some good defensive players. I agree with you. Like, we're going to lose at least one that I think was a powerful part of the defense. And I'm not saying that the defense is terrible. I'm just saying that the gap between what we've got on the roster now and somebody like a Kyle Van Noy is pretty wide, just because I'm talking more about Kyle Van Noy than I am the defense.
Mm, okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Did you know that Taysom Hill is the fifth leading rusher in the history of BYU?
So wait a minute, if I go back and I'm asked the question again and I can take Taysom Hill as a running back, what does that do?
Let me ask you this. If you could just take Taysom Hill and put him on this offense, running back, quarterback, whatever.
Am I allowed to play him on defense as well sometimes?
Maybe special teams. I mean, he's pretty good at blocking punts, apparently.
Apparently.
You know, or maybe you allow him to return some kickoffs. And here's an interesting thought question. You let him return kickoffs at BYU. Of course they wouldn't have. He was the starting quarterback, right? That'd be nuts.
And it's crazy, right?
But think about that for a second. When was the last time we had a kickoff game, kick returning game, that was meaningful, that was like a big deal?
Yeah, a long time ago.
A long time ago. So, you know, I mean, we haven't had somebody average more than 23 yards per in a season, I think, since O'Neal Chambers.
Yikes.
I saw that some recently, and I may be wrong, but, no, Hine had a couple years. I'm wrong. I think Hine was on that list. And obviously, Cody Hoffman did well when he did it. Austin Colley, if you remember, he didn't do as many because they stopped having him do it after a while. And you look at it and you go, you know, it'd be nice to have a game breaker again back there. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. And James Dye didn't do a ton of them over his career, but he was pretty electric and brought one back 100 yards for a touchdown. So that's...
Yeah, he was awesome.
That's kind of impressive. But anyway, let's move on, Matt. We're going to talk college football here. Gary Anderson, this seems like this is 2008. Gary Anderson was just named head coach at Utah State University.
Hey, what's next? Is Robert and I coming back?
Maybe.
I mean, what happens now? I don't even know where we go from here.
I don't know where we go. Here comes Bronco.
But I think I'm happy about this.
You're happy about it?
Oh, sure.
Okay. I'd love to hear this. Why are you happy about
Gary
Anderson?
I don't know.
Return?
I'd have to go back and look. Haven't we beat Gary Anderson before?
We have beat
Gary. Okay, then I feel good about it.
So Matt Wells, of course, left to take the head coaching job at Texas Tech. Matt, would you have left Utah State to take the job at Texas Tech if you were Matt Wells?
Negative. In 2018, right now, if I were in his shoes and I had the choice between staying at Utah State where I had shown some things and going into the hot dumpster fire mess that is Texas Tech right now, no, I would not have taken that job.
I
know it feels like a promotion because maybe financially they must have offered him more money.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And you're going into a more prestigious conference, but you are setting yourself up for failure. Like,
well,
take the money and run, I guess. But
I would have given
him
another year. I mean, he's got a decent roster at Utah State. If he puts together another season like that, but the counter argument to that is, how many really good seasons has Utah State had in our lifetimes? Not very many. And those have been followed by their coach leaving, typically fairly rapidly thereafter. And Gary Anderson,
including one a couple years ago when Gary Anderson left.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm Wells. I mean, financially, you probably just do it because you can bank the money.
Yeah, bird in hand's better than two in the bush.
Yeah,
or blah,
but from
blah,
a career
blah.
Perspective, I'm with you. Texas Tech is not the kind of job. You know, this isn't Urban Meyer leaving for Florida, right?
No, I think if you're taking the bet on yourself approach, the bet on yourself approach would have been to stay in Logan for another year or two. I feel like taking the Texas Tech job is I better take this before everybody figures it out, and go cash some checks and go from there.
So Gary Anderson basically was he's been a mess since he left, right? The Wisconsin deal was weird and he left, and obviously Oregon State didn't end particularly well. Do you think Gary Anderson 2.0 is going to work?
No.
Oh, I don't think it's going to work either. Sorry to put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, it's not like, and listen, the much maybe undeservedly maligned Dr. Robert and I, right? Like, Robert and I 2.0 was better than Robert and I 1.0.
No, it wasn't. Stop it. It was way better the first time. Are you kidding me? It was way better the first time. He had, like, top 25 offenses the first time.
I just kind of wanted to see what you would say.
Okay, all right.
I just kind of wanted to see what you would say. You jumped on it way faster than I thought you would.
But I still liked 2.0, by the way.
I thought I had a little bit of time to, like, to sew it a little bit.
Hey, maybe it would have been fine if a bunch of you jokers hadn't called for a nice head the first time.
Yeah, whatever.
How have other offensive coordinators done at BYU in the last decade besides Dr. and I?
Well,
Doman, Detmer, Grimes. Who would you take right now? just a question for Mr. Doubter from many years ago that wanted an eye fired.
I'll tell you right now, I'd take an eye. But
of course you would.
And I would say the same thing if you'd asked me that question 10 years ago, because none of those guys have offensive coordinator experience.
But neither did an eye. He came from Texas Tech just like Grimes did as an offensive line guy.
He had experience.
Yeah, I'm just telling you. I mean, we're never going to get the guy with experience unless he's veteran BYU guy that just decides to come back because he wants to. You're never going to get that guy. The problem was for each of the other hires besides Anai, and Grimes, of course, the jury's still out, was Doman was promoted from within. And honestly, at the time, I thought it was going to work great. You know, he'd learned under Anai. He'd been a really, smart quarterback. And though he didn't have the game calling experience, he had been right there.
Right.
For some good offenses. So I felt pretty good about that one. As you recall, I was not happy with the Detmer hire. I was hopeful, but doubtful, right, from the beginning. And then Grimes I've been excited about because it's the same path as a lot of good offensive coordinators take, right? They work on a good offensive staff, and then they go someplace else and build their own thing.
Yeah, the Grimes option is the best of what you can expect at BYU, right?
Yeah.
And what they did to Detmer and the position they put Detmer in was kind of the worst way that it could work out for somebody.
I agree with you, but Detmer's a big boy. He took the job, right?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's an adult and he made that decision. But I mean, but really, like, the smart thing with Detmer would to bring him in as a quarterback coach. But maybe he doesn't want to come in and be a quarterback coach. Maybe they had made that offer to him previously and that didn't light the fire for him. I don't know. Right. But it was a big leap they were asking him to take. You know, you go and you get somebody like an Anai or a Grimes who's got some experience in a bigger time program and have them come in. I think you've got a much higher percentage likelihood of success there. It's probably pretty likely, I think, is the way you would put it.
So last week we had this little section where we talked about Dante's circles of college football hell. Okay. And we had quite a few responses to that. I'm going to read some of them right now. The first one comes from Christian Draper on Twitter. That's at TheGorilla1. He says, just finished listening to the podcast for this week. I think a Big 12 team everybody can hate is Texas. So is Texas in those circles of hell?
I don't hate UT. And I think that my view on it might be twisted just because of where I live and the amount of Texas A&M garbage I have to deal with. And maybe that's why I don't hate UT, but I don't have a burning hatred for the burnt orange.
Okay, you don't. But let me ask you a question. Number one hated team for Texas Tech in the state. Who do they hate the most?
Maybe UT.
UT. Number one hated team for A&M.
UT.
Number one hated team for TCU in state.
Oh, geez, it's UT.
Number one hated team for Rice. Probably UT.
Yeah, number one hated team for Oklahoma.
Number one hated team for the University of Houston.
Oh, boy.
Probably UT. I think Christian's got this one nailed. I mean, not for you and I personally, because I also don't hate UT. I don't know if there's a Big 12 team I hate. Now that
Big 12 seems like a big teddy bear right now. You know, I don't know.
With like an eye missing and some fluff coming out the leg.
Need a little seam repair. In the land. It's like in the land of misfit toys.
We were joking about this,
and they just won a Heisman Trophy and are potentially in the running for a national championship.
But that's Oklahoma. That's not the conference. The conference isn't winning a championship. Oklahoma's winning a championship. Look at the rest of that garbage.
And their Heisman Trophy winning quarterback's probably going to go play baseball.
And Les Miles is coming to the conference.
Hashtag guaranteed contracts.
That's right.
Yeah, Les Miles. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Oh, the Mad Hatter's back. It'll be great. All right, next one on this topic is from Justin D. Sweeney.
Sweeney.
I thought the Dante Circles of Hell College Football Edition was classic, he says. I've laughed. What's that?
It's a classic piece of literature.
Yeah, it is a classic piece of literature.
Our audience is very well read. I'm impressed.
Very, very well read. Hardest I've laughed in a Rise and Shout podcast in a while. I guess we got to up our game, dude.
Apparently.
That was like a backwards, what do they say, a backhanded compliment?
As a backhanded compliment. Yeah, I feel kind of bad about it.
Yeah, during off season, we seriously should do an entire podcast on this. Okay.
Agreed.
All right. It's on the list. And then Andre Hutchins at @AC_Hutchins says, I have to agree, he says to Justin. That would be pretty fun. Most hated teams, worst places to play in away game. Boise. Top three FBS teams you never want to see on BYU's schedule. Worst stadium concessions you've ever had. Why isn't Rise and Shout recording this already? We will, Andre. And by the way,
this is going to be a great show.
So Brian Taylor took exception to us making fun of the Boise Airport. Okay.
Yeah, I think the entire state of Idaho didn't really appreciate.
Two things.
I've never been in that airport.
I have been to that airport. Two things. Okay. First part, I'm just poking fun at Boise. I really like Idaho. I don't really have anything against Idaho. So I'm not like other people that go to school or live in Utah and like look down on Idaho. I've never really gotten that. You know, have you ever been to Tooele? Not all of Utah is beautiful. And there's a lot of cool things in Idaho.
See, why did you have to go there? I'm sure that now we're going to get somebody from Tooele is going to be like, hey guys, like ease up on Tooele. All right. It's a great community.
I've
had four generations of my family have lived here. Probably some general authority. Why do you have to keep doing it? It's just this endless cycle.
So when I was a sports writer at the Daily Herald, I covered Utah Valley Community College. Then, you know, now UVU, but it was Utah Valley Community College. And I was covering that team, and they were very good that year. And they had they were going to play, but they lost a late season game to snow. And so the conference tournament was happening in Ephraim. All right. And so I made fun of Ephraim. Not really. All I said was I don't want to drive all the way to Ephraim to cover this tournament. It was my entire column. All right. And number one, we had three old ladies from Ephraim write in, and they were canceling their subscriptions to the Daily Herald. So, yay. But at the next Utah Valley basketball game was against Snow, and there were students from Snow who had signs making fun of me by name. It was phenomenal. One of the best moments of my
brief
sports writing career. I'm like, people actually read this stuff.
That's an amazing story, and also shows a very clear pattern.
Yes, it does. But here's the thing:
have not broken to this day.
I like Boise as a city. I almost took a job in Boise years ago, and it wasn't the location that dissuaded me. I just picked a different job. I think Boise is a nice place, but two things are true: the airport is not that big. That's just a fact. I mean,
oh jeez, you're doubling down on the airport thing. You're doubling down. There's a direct flight from Minneapolis into Boise.
There's a direct flight from everywhere from Minneapolis. We're a freaking hub for Delta. I can get to Pasco, Washington on a direct flight. All right.
I don't even know if that's a place. Is that even a place?
Where's the Tri-Cities, man?
I can't wait till somebody from Pasco, Washington listens to the podcast gets on me now.
I'm just saying, I could get a direct flight to almost anywhere out of Minneapolis. That doesn't judge. Boise's fine. The airport's fine. I'm not even making fun of the airport anymore.
Here's what I want to know about the airport in Boise. Is there good food in the airport in Boise? Somebody tell me that. Somebody who's been to that airport recently, somebody tell me that.
I haven't been there long enough to know.
That'll move the needle for me.
You know what I need?
Apparently you need one of those. You're not the same when you're thirsty.
But anyway, I hate the Smurf turf, though. I hate it.
And Boise's still not a state. It's probably a wonderful place, but it's not a state. The just Smurf like turf really is what gets me. And I think part of it was, and I said this to somebody from Idaho, actually, who asked me what I thought about the bowl matchup today. I was kind of hoping we'd get a game in Dallas that I could drive to. So part of what we all heard coming out, I was taking a little bit of my frustration out on the fact that I wasn't going to be able to go to the game.
Well, and that's fair. I wasn't going to be able to go to the game regardless, and nor was I planning on it. I've actually never been to a bowl game. Matt, have you been to a bowl game?
I've not, and in the next couple of years, I see that changing. So,
yeah, I would have been more excited if that Poinsettia Bowl in San Diego hadn't been canceled. Nothing against Boise.
Yeah, see, I could get behind a San Diego trip. Yeah, that's nice.
That would be nice. But Matt, speaking of bowls, we're doing part one of our bowl game extravaganza.
Extravaganza!
So here's where we predict all of the bowl games, and mostly we do so without knowing anything about either of the two teams.
I watch a lot of college football, but we're about to talk about games where I've not seen either of the two teams play this year. So it's going to be fantastic.
Let's start off with and this is how we do it. We both pick a winner. And then we say percent chance we watch any of this game.
Wow, your explanation was surprisingly clear.
Yes, well, I've been practicing it for 2 weeks, so.
Apparently. Wait, right. 8 years wasn't enough?
No, it wasn't. All right, the first game, Matt, is the Auto Nation Cure Bowl.
I don't even know what is that even about? Okay.
I don't know. It's in Camping World Stadium in Orlando.
In all seriousness, do we know what they're raising money to cure?
I don't.
Okay, that was just an honest question. All right, I don't. At the Camping World Stadium. All right, tickets as low as $18.
Tickets as low as $18. Get them while they're hot. 6-6 Tulane Green Wave. 7-6 Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns. Matt, who you got?
I think it's great that these two teams that are. Both Louisiana teams, just a few hours apart from each other, are gonna go fight this out in Orlando. But I'm taking the Ragin' Cajuns in this one.
Yes, I'm taking the Green Wave. And there's 0% chance I see any of this game.
Let's see. It's on a Saturday?
Saturday. These five games are all on Saturday. That we're about to talk
I
about.
Bet I see some of it.
Okay.
I'm desperate for some football right now.
Okay. All right. Well, a little later, you could catch the New Mexico Bowl, which, oddly enough, happens in New Mexico.
Dream Style Stadium. What is Dream Style Stadium?
Who cares? North Texas.
I don't even know what
that
is.
The Mean Green out of North Texas, 9-3, against the 10-2 aforementioned Utah State Aggies. Matt, this is what you get when you get second place in the Mountain West Conference that some of our fans want to go back to. You get a matchup with North Texas in the New Mexico Bowl.
It's the land of enchantment, and you're playing at UNM's home stadium. That's all that Dream Style. Isn't that the social media platform in the last Bourne movie?
I thought it was the female character in the Lego movie. No, that's Wild Style. Sorry. Totally. Oh,
what in the world? What are we talking
totally
about right now?
Totally messed that up. I've got Utah State in this one.
I don't
think it's going to be close.
No, this isn't going to be close. Utah State's going to trounce these turkeys. Tickets as low as $44.
All right. The next one that day is the Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl. Las Vegas.
Las Vegas Bowl. We're familiar with this one.
Viva
out of
Las
Sam
Vegas.
Boyd.
Herm Edwards and the Arizona State Sun Devils are 7-5. Against the 11-2 Fresno State. I guess they're actually were the second place team, huh? This is the second place bowl. Or is this top bowl?
Does anybody even know anymore?
I don't know. Who cares? It's the Mountain West. Matt, Fresno State is favored by 4.5 points. I am also taking the Bulldogs. That's why you got to play the game.
No, see, you stole my thing, okay? So, yeah, Fresno State is playing in this game because they did come out number one in the Mountain West Conference, okay? They're 7-1. They had for a Mountain West Conference team a solid season. But that being said, Irm Edwards, you play to win the games. I'm taking the Sun Devils. What do I say here? Is it like
Fork
Up or something?
Did you say Irm Edwards without an H?
Maybe I did.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I've
never heard that pronunciation. I believe it's Herm.
I don't understand. I don't hear a difference there.
All right. The next one is the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl. I don't even, where is that?
I don't know. It's at the Crampton Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama.
Of course it is.
Come on.
Georgia Southern, 9-3. Eastern Michigan, 7-5. Who cares? I don't care. I'll pick Georgia Southern.
What is the Crampton Bowl?
They're both Eagles. So who you got? And by the way, I see some of the New Mexico or the Las Vegas Bowl.
Okay, for just a second. Okay, can we just talk about something real quickly? The Raycom Media Camellia Bowl is being played in a high school football stadium. Okay? Like, that's just a fact. And
is that
tickets
true?
As low... Tickets as low as $39. Yes. There are two things that are hosted. There are two things that are hosted at the Crampton Bowl.
Okay.
The annual Camellia Bowl for the NCAA Division I football bowl subdivision and Montgomery's five high school squads.
Oh, well, good. I'm sure it's a great
place.
It
at one point hosted the Alabama State Hornets. But, this is – like, I'm looking at pictures of this. Like, my local high school stadium – is about the same size. I'd have to look at capacity and see if it's that much bigger. But anyway,
Georgia Southern or Eastern Michigan?
Eastern Michigan. I'm going to take the directional Michigan school over a team that I didn't realize was a Division I school until 2 seconds ago.
Excellent. All right. The last game on Saturday. Oh, and percent chance you see some of that game.
That's going to be zero. By then, I'll be good. I'll be done watching bad football.
Okay.
That point.
All right. And the last game that day is the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. 6-5 Middle Tennessee State, 10-2 Appalachian State. Both of those things are not states. Matt,
Middle Tennessee? What is this?
Middle Tennessee. And Appalachian State is favored, I think, by a touchdown. I'm going to take the Mountaineers over the Blue Raiders.
Yeah, I'm taking Appalachian State here, too. And I'm just kidding. Middle Tennessee, I mean, we've all heard of Middle Tennessee, at least, right?
Yeah.
Like, I knew they were a team.
Yeah, I did know they were a team. On Tuesday the 18th, Matt, one team that we are familiar with, that's Northern Illinois Huskies. They're 8-5 against UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham, 10-3.
The team that came back from the dead. This is a program that was canceled a couple of years ago. They didn't even exist. They were canceled.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
No, and they came back.
Yeah, and they're pretty decent offense. I'm gonna take UAB in this one.
Yeah, I've got to root for UAB in this one. I love the story. I love the fact that like everybody had abandoned hope, and the players and some people got together and they made it right. They put it back together. I'd love to see this team beat NIU. It's just a great story. And tickets as low as $28.
That's right, in Boca Raton. Matt, there's a very good chance I see at least some of this game because it's on a Tuesday night and the timing of it. It's a pretty good chance.
Yeah, I'd say the chances are very high.
The next night is the DXL Frisco Bowl in Texas. That's the 8-4 Ohio Bobcats versus the 7-5, my favorite team, the San Diego State Aztecs.
You love San Diego State.
Oh, love them. Love them. I've got the surprise, surprise, I'm picking the Bobcats.
You're picking the Bobcats just because you hate San Diego State.
What other reason do I need?
I'm taking San Diego State here.
Oh, my gosh! Why are you doing that?
Because there's 81 tickets available for as low as
$49. All right.
I love that ESPN shows this. It's such a great thing to know.
0% chance I see any of that game. Don't care.
It's a Wednesday night. I'm desperate for some football. I will probably watch some of this game, but Wednesday nights are tough.
All right. Thursday, December 20th, there is the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl.
Gasparilla, is that? That's like a medical condition, right?
I think so. 8-4.
I got the Gasparilla.
8-4 Marshall Thundering Herd versus the 7-3 South Florida Bulls. I'm taking Marshall. We are Marshall, Matt.
Are you serious? Oh, you take South Florida in this game all day long.
0% chance I see that one, too. Friday, December 21st, of course, there's the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, which we'll talk about that one next week. But the other bowl earlier that day is the Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl versus 8-4 Florida International, which I did not know was a team, versus 7-5 Toledo Rockets. I'm taking the Rockets.
I'm also taking the Rockets here.
0% chance I see any of that game because I'm cashing in all of my chips later that day. And then the Saturday, there's four games. These will be the last four we cover. Let's do this rapid fire. You got Memphis and Wake Forest in the Jared Birmingham Bowl. Who you got?
Wake Forest, baby.
I'm taking Wake Forest. 100% chance I see at least some of that game.
104%.
What?
104%.
104%. All right. Later that afternoon is the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl that has Houston versus Army. I'm taking Army.
I'm also taking Army.
And I will see a good chance I see some of that one.
100%.
That night, there is our two bowl games. The first one is the Dollar General Bowl, Buffalo and Troy. Don't care. I'll take Troy because, I don't know, why not? 0% chance I see any of that game.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch that.
Yeah. Who you got, though?
Troy, sure.
And the nightcap is the SoFi, or is it SoFi? SoFi, right?
I think they pronounce it SoFi. This is the lending thing? Yeah, they say yeah, SoFi. Yeah.
The Hawaii Bowl, that of course is Hawaii. A lot of travel for them for this bowl game versus Louisiana Tech. I'm going to take Hawaii in this one, Matt, and 0% chance I see any of it.
Why are we so well lined up here? Yes, Hawaii.
Yes, and 0% chance.
I'm probably not going to watch any of that game.
But tickets are as low as $25.
And there's 299 left. I do want to just note that the ESPN website says for the Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl, there's one ticket as low as $96 available. How is there, like, there's one ticket left for that game?
That's right.
Is that true? Yeah. Is that true?
No.
Who is this?
I bet you can get in there for less than $96.
I bet you could.
I bet you if you fly down to the Bahamas on Friday, December 21st, you may be able to
scalpers are probably pretty tough. We'll see.
We shall see. Well, we'll be back next week, Matt. And besides previewing the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, in a way in which, unlike these previews where we actually know something and maybe say something halfway intelligent, we will also preview the rest of the part two of our bowl game extravaganza.
Extravaganza!
So you will get to see that. And then we'll have hopefully some cool news to talk about women's volleyball. A couple more data points for men's basketball, and we'll slowly, I think, see Nick Emery's minutes keep going up. Do you think he'll be a sixth man all year?
No.
Do you think they bring him off the bench all year?
No, they're just working him in. He'll be a starter.
I think it might be interesting if they made him a sixth man. Of course, he finishes the game. I don't know. It'll be interesting, but I think you're right. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. You can find this podcast on iTunes or anywhere great podcasts are found. Somebody asked about Spotify. I just keep forgetting to add it. I'll go try to do that this week.
You're such a loser. Why are you a loser?
I am kind of a loser.
I feel like that was a little harsh.
What? Did you call me a loser?
Yeah.
You've called me worse. But anyway, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.